Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we talk about games, the games we've been playing, the news from the industry, a little bit of analysis. Hopefully, we have a good time together. I'm Patrick Beja, and from the literal other side of the planet, Rob May is joining me. Rob, how's it going?
Going well. It's a beautiful Hanami season that's relatively warm here in Yamaguchi, Japan, for me. But good to see you again, or rather hear you in this case.
Yes, you are in Japan, as you mentioned. You're also the one of the two hosts of Omnic Lab, which is the best strategic Overwatch podcast in existence. How do you keep it running in those times where new things are relatively sparse in Overwatch?
Well, the nice thing about it is that being the number one in a category so specific is that there's not a whole lot of competition. So it's kind of nice when no one else is trying to vie for that competitive strategic flair that you are also going with. And I will say that it sometimes is a bit sparse with the news in particular, but the way that it's structured, we end up touching on a lot of topics multiple times, even though in the backlog you can find relatively similar ideas, for example, the mental game or kind of teeing up fights, just because of how the meta ends up shaking out. And then what's been going on this last month is they've been doing this big experimental mode added to the game. It's kind of like a PTR hybrid that they're allowing the console folks to have advantage of. And it's been really fun to go with that, as well as the Season 21 of Overwatch had weekly hero pools that were different than the Overwatch League ones. So each week they would ban or essentially or remove a hero or a heroes from specific roles to hopefully spice up the meta and change team comps and counter picks.
So you would
and
discuss
stuff. So it's been very interesting
every week on how it affects the gameplay and all of that. That's that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
I've
it's been a real big challenge, but it's been fun.
I've been ended up playing mostly random in Overwatch because I don't want to wait. When I have 10 minutes, I can sneak a game in. So that's changed my life a bit. But before we start talking about the games we've been playing, and there's some stuff, Half-Life, you've been playing Animal Crossing, Doom. I've also dipped into Bleeding Edge. You had a fun time going to work in the past day or
this
two.
Morning was quite the adventure. So for a little bit of context, Doom and Animal Crossing released last Friday for me, or released Friday in the context that I could play, if that makes sense. So when that rolled in, I spent basically that first weekend essentially playing a lot of Doom for the first 2, 3, 4 days, and then rolling around after that, I realized that some of my Australian friends that are in my D&D group also picked up Animal Crossing, and my entire Twitter feed is full of people posting fishing memes and catching crazy things in Animal Crossing. So I was like, okay, well, we'll give this a shot. Maybe because of all the schools canceling here in Japan, that I'll actually get a chance to, like, I don't know, enjoy this at work, because I can't play Doom from my work PC, but I can take my Switch with me if I need to, or if I can, when I'm at work for what they call office days, where we don't really have anything to do. So long story short, I went and had been losing sleep steadily for about a week and a half now, and it finally caught up to me last night when I just could not handle it and went to bed at like 7, woke up at midnight, couldn't sleep until like 2 or 3 in the morning, fell back asleep, woke up at my alarm, started the whole process of rolling out of bed, turning the alarm off, and kind of like essentially like gearing up to actually get out of bed, I realized that I drifted back into sleep, did my whole morning routine in a dream, woke up when I was about to tell my wife goodbye in the morning. And I was like, oh no, what time is it? And it was 3 minutes before my bus was going to arrive, like just down the street from me. I was like, there is no way I'm gonna have time to get to that bus, even if I'm just changing clothes. So I messaged my friend that is also my coworker, essentially, when I go to the Board of Education office, because I'm a teacher. So when they don't have breaks as an assisted language teacher, we have to go there. And to get to there, he's like, oh, you could just take the other bus that you take normally to your other school and just get off early. I was like, oh, that's great. He's like, oh, it's in like 17 minutes. I was like, oh, crap. So then I'm like rushing to get to my next bus, my only other backup to get to work. Besides waiting like 2 hours for the next bus by my house. And so I like freak out, change clothes, get all my stuff in my backpack. And I have a 15-minute walk to the station to give me like a 2 to 3 minute buffer to get onto the bus. So I'm like briskly walking in the morning, and I didn't really realize that it's supposed to be warm today. So I have like two jackets on, just melting, walking all the way down to my bus. Finally get there, walk down the street to a convenience store to get some like relative breakfast of coffee and like, I don't know, some pancakes or something, and then walk into work. And I'm just like,
wait,
this is not supposed to be a stressful job.
This is all because you were playing too much Animal Crossing? Is that?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
It just caught up to me.
Well, I am not a big fan of Animal Crossing, but maybe you will convince me. Although before that, we're going to be talking a little bit about Half-Life Alyx. And I think I'm going to be a curmudgeon today because... okay. First of all,
if I can talk you down, let's do it.
Let's see. First of all, Half-Life Alyx, I didn't think I was going to be able to play it because the minimum specs requirements are like a GTX 1060, and my card is a GTX 970, which is 5 years old at this point. And it is an awesome card. I really love it. It still plays everything really well. But I figured, you know, maybe it's not going to run. It's not going to launch. I then looked into it about, I don't know, 5 days after the game launched. And it turns out it runs it really well. So I bought the game, installed it. I had Virtual Desktop sideloaded on my Oculus Quest. And for those who don't know, Virtual Desktop is a piece of software that lets you stream your desktop from your desktop to your Oculus Quest, among other things. And it does that in Wi-Fi. So you're wireless. But the sideloaded version, it's an official one, but you can't just download it from the Oculus Store. It's a kind of a hassle to get it on the Quest. But once you do, you can also stream VR games via Wi-Fi. And it works super, super well. It's essentially you don't need
it. Sounds like it.
You don't need the Link piece of software to connect to your PC with this elusive, USB cord that will support power and USB 3 and all of that. You just connect via Wi-Fi. Again, it is a little bit of a hassle to put a virtual desktop on the Quest because you need to not jailbreak it, but essentially to turn it into a developer account. And that is a little bit of an involved process, but once you do it, you just launch virtual desktop on your PC and on your Quest, and you just have access to all your games wirelessly, and it works perfectly. So that was the good surprise on the compatibility front of things.
Sounds like a great workaround, to be honest.
It is, because even
have you tried messing with the streaming restrictions on it, Patrick? Like, if there's any way that you can still stream it in that setup?
I don't stream, so I didn't really do it, but I don't think there would be any restriction because you still get the version, the screen, the monitor version of the game on the monitor.
So you just do a monitor capture then?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. So that would work.
Okay.
And so that was just a really great surprise. So I started playing Half-Life Alyx, and I think I've played maybe 4 hours so far, which is a third to half of the game. And that's where I turn into the, I don't like joy.
All right, let's hear it. let's hear it. Come on, lay it down, Patrick. Tell us why you don't like it.
Listen, it's not that I don't like it. I've enjoyed
that's a great way to start an argument.
I've enjoyed the time I've spent in it, probably about as much to a little bit more than any other game, VR game I've enjoyed so far, save for Beat Saber, which is kind of in its own category.
Right.
But the other games, I didn't really love them to begin with. And Half-Life Alyx, just to preface this, everyone loves it. I don't think I've seen any review of Half-Life Alyx which doesn't say this is a masterpiece. Like, this is a 10 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10. It's fantastic. It's finally VR gets what we were waiting for. It's a great game, a must buy, etc., etc. I think the Giant Bomb crew was like, this is just another VR game. I don't get it. And this is my experience. It might be that graphics play so much into it that, you know, I don't get it as much. It might be that later in the game you get into sequences that make it shine. But I've been through quite a few things, and I've experienced some of the things that people say are incredible about it. And to me, it feels like just another VR game. Like, it's kind of a best of, a medley of the best things that VR developers have done, but it doesn't transcend them. It doesn't make them, it doesn't add anything
is what you're getting
better. At. Yeah, it's just what you've known in VR for 2-3 years now, just in the Half-Life universe, which is great. But so to give a little bit of detail on what I mean, there's a sense of, so the sense of presence is great, but the item, for example, the physics in the game, when you first jump in, you have things that you can interact with, and you can grab them, and you can throw them, and all of that works, as it has in every single VR game for the past few years. But there are limits to that become apparent very quickly. Like, the items obviously don't have weight. When you grab a big barrel, it's just you just grab it, and it's just as
it's amnesia physics,
kind of.
you just chuck it,
and it's just, I mean, I understand why. Obviously, you can't like assign weight to your actual literal arm in the world, so you can kind of slow it down or lock it in the world, and you can't raise it higher than something, but it doesn't have weight, so that breaks the immersion feeling a little bit. Many of the items, you can grab them, but you can't manipulate them further. So a few items you can break, but a book you can't open, a suitcase you can't open, a box you can't open. So you can't like grab it on one side, grab the other side and open it. It's just the box is the model that it is. I killed a head crab at some point. And I grabbed it, and I grabbed it by one of the leg, took another leg in the other arm, in the other hand, and pulled. Well, the tension in the model gets crazy. It starts shaking, like vibrating, like some kind of, I don't know, weird thing. It clips into itself, and it does, like, it doesn't, you can't tear it or do anything like that. It's just the standard 3D model weirdness. And there's this is just a couple of examples, and it's not game breaking. It's just that it doesn't do anything better than what we've seen in VR until now, or quite frankly, in regular games. Like the gimmick, the fact that you have to grab a magazine and reload your weapon, it physically is fun for a couple of times, but then it's just okay. I just do it. Yeah, and yes, you do get into frantic situations where you're like, you have a very limited number of bullets and you shoot zombies, they need a lot of bullets to go down, and then you're like, they're coming close and you have to reload the magazine, and it's just, you have to learn physically, like the muscle memory of how to reload it,
right?
Like, and it works, but it's just,
it's that,
like,
it's that little fantasy piece that is like the inconvenience is to give you the payoff of the survivalistic mentality, right?
Yes,
like they're giving
absolutely.
You this inconvenient factor to help you get the immersion of becoming the survivalist. Absolutely. Like when you get out of your last magazine, you just walk into the thing that, like, the little tongue monsters that are in the dark that, like, lick you up to the ceiling. You're like, oh crap, how do I reload? I'm, like, going up into the ceiling. I'm gonna die.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And yes, it does get your heart rate up and you're like, oh shit, what do I do? But at the same time, and I know that some people are gonna go, you're crazy, it was great for me, it was, but I'm being pulled up on this by the barnacles, I think they're called.
Yeah,
but I'm not being, like, the screen is becoming red, but I'm not physically affected. And people are going to say, of course, you have to, like, suspend disbelief, but I'm not physically affected. So I'm just looking upstairs, looking up and, like, grabbing my, if I manage to not panic, I just grab the thing, aim, oh, I missed it, okay, I'm dead. It's like, sometimes there's a frantic feeling, and sometimes there isn't because you're not affected by it. And even when there is, it's like, well, that was annoying more than anything. Like, I tried to grab the magazine and I dropped it. And that happens often. Not all the time.
Yeah.
It's like maybe 10% of the time there's an item that you don't grab the way you wanted. And it's the game. It's not you. It's like the game, the physics didn't work properly. It's just 10% of the time. That's not a lot. 10% of the time is 1 out of 10. So it will happen when you do it 100 times during a play session. It will happen enough that it's annoying.
10 hours you play.
Yeah. So, listen, it's a good VR game. And I think people who love VR are going to love it. And I think some people who discover VR who have never seen any of these things are going to be enthralled by the magic of VR. But there are a category of people in between which are like, yeah, VR is cool. But, you know, I've seen things like Astrobot Rescue Mission was doing interesting things in VR. This, not so much. You even have the gravity gloves, which mean, obviously, because you can't have infinite space in your room, you can't walk to places. So the gravity gloves allow you to pull, like, force grab things easily from the other side of the room, and you grab them in your hand. But that means that
the physics with those are really incredible, though. You have to give the hand to the team for that one, because you could be pulling things through, like, gaps that you wouldn't normally be able to reach through with your model. You know what I mean? Like, that was really cool when I was watching some of the gameplay for this.
It is.
Especially. I love that you
could
do that.
But I think the other effect is that it means that it removes a little bit of physicality from the world. Because it doesn't matter where the thing is. You don't have to walk to it. You don't have to grab it. And if the thing is close, then yeah, but you end up just flicking your wrist and grabbing the thing, which is at the other side of the room. So it makes it even more video gamey. You know, there's this push and pull with the physicality and presence of the world, which ends up being, like, I think making the game just a good VR experience. But no more than that, which is already great, you know. But I don't think this doesn't legitimize VR for me. It doesn't legitimize VR for me more than it has been before.
So I could see that point of view for sure about legitimizing VR if that's, like, your standpoint walking into Half-Life Alyx. But if you're looking to, like, enjoy a Half-Life game, I think it ticks all the right boxes, and that's why it's getting such critical acclaim. Because it keeps all of the boxes of what you're looking for in a Half-Life game. It gives you the gravity gun in a lesser sense right out of the gate with the gloves, and the nostalgia for which people have been waiting for over a decade, maybe, what is it, 2 decades since Half-Life 2 released? So the fact that they're giving us this is really great. Are you familiar with a creator by the name of Video Game Donkey on YouTube?
I am not.
Okay, if you like kind of crude, crass video game humor in a short format, I think that you'll really like his Alyx video, because basically the whole video is him messing around in the system and doing things that are probably not intended, and then also showcasing all of the most common frustration moments. He's like, if I see one of these circle globe puzzles one more time, I swear I'm gonna throw my headset out the window. And it's really great, because I think that, like, showcasing some of the common gripes and the things that you really like about the game is really helpful. But what you said about your kind of what you were looking for in this game is really important, I think, to the creators of the game as well, because you're not all of the dynamic of the player base looking to pick up Half-Life Alyx, but you're definitely a part of them. And so, like, if some of the people are unhappy, I think that's some major things that they should be paying attention to if they're trying to iterate and improve. Because well, I know that there was some initial thing about movement in the game and like interacting with some of the stuff that was like in the alpha or beta that some of the people were playing. And then the regular one that's now shipped, you can actually like walk and like grab handlebars on ladders and stuff. Whereas I don't think that was actually initially in the build of the game at first. You had to like click and point with your remotes.
Yeah, I think you, it's possible you can do both. I click and point for most of what I do. But I completely understand the idea of, is this a good a Half-Life game? And I think it's a decent one. It's a pretty good one even. But the question of what does that do for VR is also a one that we've heard and a valid one, I think. And it's just, I guess, I'm not... I love Half-Life. I think most people love Half-Life. But
of course,
I don't think it's, so far at least, it's not like, it's good. It's a good Half-Life game. It's not like it's good, mind-blowing. Yeah. But the VR thing is more significant. I don't think it, on that end, on that side, it's not. To me, at least. But again, I'm in the minority and I'm a little bit of the curmudgeon here. So
yeah, I mean, if you're looking for Half-Life Alyx to be an innovative game, then that's probably not the first game that you should be picking up. If you want to look at all of the good things that VR does in a general sense, then it probably ticks those boxes for you.
Right? Yeah, yeah, probably. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's a very competent and even good showcase for VR in a package that is an actual full game with where all aspects of it are very well realized. So
now, Patrick, is Half-Life Alyx a, I don't even want to drag the creator's name in it, but like, who is the creator gaming studio for Alyx?
Oh, it's Valve.
Do you have an offhand? It's Valve. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's Valve. It's
because I don't think this is Valve's first, like, this is not Valve's first rodeo with dipping their toes into VR, is it?
Oh, not at all. They've made a few things. There's The Lab, which is a kind of series of little fun experiences, and they've been full on into the, you know, the hardware side of things as well. They've in partnership with other manufacturers done a number of headsets, and it's, you know, they are full into VR. So this is something they're doing very seriously.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see what they'll do next.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's and I'm thankful that I'm in the minority and not loving Alyx. I'm liking it. I'm just not loving it. I don't want people to think that I don't like it. That wouldn't be accurate. But I'm just not blown away by it. And I think down the line, I doubt that it will leave a mark, as big a mark as the current, you know, rankings and reviews might lead you to think. But a couple of other games that are also getting great reviews are Animal Crossing and Doom, which we've talked about in the past couple of weeks. But you've actually been playing quite a bit. I played Doom as well. Maybe we can start with that one, and then you can convince me that Animal Crossing is something I should get into. but what's your feelings of on Doom? And I mean the game, so, not the, you know, situation where
I think when you come across looking at Doom in the very first thing, you're looking for two main things, which is maybe even three. The first one is this a good enough FPS that I can enjoy playing it for a long time? The second thing that you're going to be looking at is this game hard enough for me to play? Right? If you're coming to this game from as like a shooter veteran or a shooter casual, is it hard enough for you to play is a really important question, because you don't want it to be too easy, even from a casual standpoint. And you don't want it to be easy at any standpoint if you're playing it as a veteran on like the hardest difficulty you want to challenge.
Okay.
And then the last is, do you put this in the category of, does this give me enough Doom nostalgia where I'm playing Doom Bro and I'm killing the demons and they feel relatively similar, and do I have enough nostalgia weaponry that I can have access to with marrying that to new gun concepts, new gun game play, new graphics, etc. right? And one thing that I will put in here as kind of just an extra introductory statement is that one of my friends told me, as a really hardcore player in the VR space, and is a huge FPS player, said that the only reason he didn't pick up Doom Eternal was that he didn't finish the last one because all of the combat was too samey. Oh. So that was a really interesting thing to me, because I had not, like, full disclosure, I had actually never played another Doom game more than 5 minutes up until this one.
What?
This is the first Doom that I actually bought. So I had a really conservative upbringing in my defense for a certain realm of time, but Doom also just never really appealed to me in the first sense. In that respect, I was always a Halo guy. That's what I started with. But I think that Doom is really, really interesting because I put it down for Animal Crossing to try Animal Crossing out and ended up just not going back yet. But it's still like within a, you know, 2 week period of the game's launch. So I think that's still fair. I'll probably end up going back and finishing it. But
how much did you play to before you switched to
I want to say I put more than 10 hours into the game.
Okay.
I think that sounds right. 10 to 15, maybe 20. But I was playing it pretty much the entire time I got back home. I streamed my first playthrough for about 3 hours on the first sitting. I just acquired the BFG and went through a couple missions. And I think the storyline is such that, again, spoilers warning, if you're curious about that sort of thing, then don't listen any further. But the thing that I was about to go acquire was the sword.
Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
I don't know anything about it because I've only seen somebody beat the final boss. So I just know that there's another thing that I have to get.
Okay.
But I got to that point in the game. There's this really difficult area because there's like one of the first few times that you get into the game at the ultra violence setting that I'm on right now, which is like one or two shy of super hardcore mode. And I've been like really, really belligerent about playing in that mode. I do not want to go down. I'm going to beat the game and I'm going to do it in this mode and I'm not going to switch. I'm going to be annoying about it and stubborn. So I ended up quitting in this mission because I did it about 20 to 30 times. And it has a bunch of field hazards on the map that you have to fight on, and a whole swath of the side you can get knocked off into pits of lava and just take a ton of damage and have to restart. There's two huge demons in it, and then all of the other demons are ranged, and so they're super, super annoying to deal with. And I can't really get any of the glory kills to replenish my health relatively fast, and there's like zero armor on the map, so you have to get within melee range of these things inside of hazards. Yeah, the hazards is what makes it really difficult, because they not only damage you and put a damage over time effect on you, but some of them are like lightning stuns. So you're like locked in places. These two guys just walk up and wail you for 200 damage and you're dead. And you're just like, oh, well, okay.
All right.
Just gonna
so
stand here and die.
So in the end, do you like the game or not? Because I'm getting conflicting signals.
Like the moments when I have to figure it out. It's like, okay, is this me? Is this me coming about this from a bad standpoint? Like I'm not dexterous enough to do this. Or is this my gun swap decisions? Is this me managing my health poorly? Is this a focus fire issue? Like, am I not killing the right demons properly? Is it a movement problem? I like that challenge. Like, I'm coming from Overwatch, right? Like, I love playing that sort of game where I have to figure things out. And even when I'm making mistakes, I'm not always in tune to knowing if that's the right mistake that I'm making. Or if I'm just projecting, like, I'm making a mistake in this category.
It's really interesting how you approach it with this, like, again, it shows where you come from, but you approach it in such a strategic way. I play it on the normal difficulty. I'm not, you know, crazy in that sense. But I just play it and shoot as much as I can, of course, switching weapons and using the different tools that are available to me to overcome the challenge. But I'm not that cerebral about it. And I'm having a good time. I'm really enjoying it. I'm not as far along as you are, but I've played, I don't know, maybe 7 hours, something like that. And it's such an intense game, which I think for you is not a problem because you approach, it seems, all of your FPSs in that intense manner. But for me, I can't do more than one mission at a time because you have so many tools to think about, and so many elements, and it's such a intense, I think.
It's just a cerebral game. Like, there's so many things you've got to maintain in your head that ultimately, when I approach a fight, I'm like, okay, these are the three guns I really want to use because I just got one. You know what I mean? At least in the initial stages of the game. I want to use the new crossbow, or I want to use the new laser pew pew gun, you know, whatever it is. And at the same time, you're like, but I also don't want to die, and this is safe. So you're like, do I want to do the new thing, or do I want to do the old thing? I love the other part of the game that I think was brilliant is the weapon upgrades. Like, being able to choose like a path of what kind of shotgun you want, what kind of assault rifle do you want, and also giving you the ability to use the default version of that weapon, and then giving you a feature on your alternate fire or your right click and your left click was super crazy for me. I loved that. And then being able to just hot swap them and even speed up your hot swaps with like talent trees in the end. If you played MMOs or League of Legends, or like MOBAs or stuff like that, like, you're going to be very in tune with that sort of decision making. And it really does, even though each demon has like their own crit spots and like their super unique ways, you got to remember how to kill them. It's pretty forgiving, I think, when you get down to the lower difficulties, but I'm not sure because I've only played at this one and I've only watched people play at the super high levels. So, because like, I don't know how many viewers you're going to get playing on like easy, you know what I mean? on Twitch, you kind of have to watch people playing super hardcore or something, nightmare, whatever it's called. But I don't know. I like that decision making, Patrick. What did you think about this sort of thing? Like, going from like sniper versus like wildfire railgun version on your assault rifle and stuff like that.
I think it's all really cool, and some of it is ported from the original Doom 2016. Mm-hmm. It is very, you know, all of the mods and choosing between the weapons and between the mods. It's everything has been turned, like Doom 2016 was everything is turned to 11. In this one, everything is turned to like 20, including the complexity of the different options you have to manage and the upgrades and all of that. And I really like it. I really like it. It's Doom 2016, but more. And I don't think they've like, it's so complexified that I don't think they have anywhere left to go. Like, if they do another Doom in 2024,
if they do more, you're just gonna get lost.
I don't think, like, if anything, they would dial it back down a little bit, probably. But but yeah, no, I really like it. I think I get the sense that I'm liking it more than you. But it's
it could just not, because I'm playing something else right now. I don't know. Possible, but I really like it. I think it's fun. If I played it at an easier difficulty, then maybe I would enjoy it more. But I like the frustration. So if a game makes me mad and I haven't finished it, then I'm a completionist. I'm like, all right, it's time to just sit down and finish this. And I go and fight a boss like 30 times. I'm like, no, I don't know.
Well, so I think it's safe to say we both like it and we like the complexity and the visceral feelings of it. But you're currently occupied by another game, which is essentially the polar opposite. And I've never gotten into Animal Crossing. I think Pokemon and this are the two series that are like a complete mystery to me. Like, I don't get the... Now, I think I've heard people describe the point of it or the draw of it many times, so I kind of understand it's just a chill game. So you're enjoying it, you're liking it. How would you describe?
So I will say, initially when I was looking at the game and seeing how freaked out people are getting on the game and how hype, and like even from international standpoint, right, because I have lots of friends in Australia and I have a few friends in New Zealand, I've got all the assistant language teachers in my prefecture in Japan that are from different countries, of course, and then Japanese kids that I've interacted with that are some of my students, and even just friends from back home. So initially I just didn't think this game was that interesting. I was just like, why is this the game that people choose to just lose their mind over? Like, what is the fandom gotta be for something like this that you're gonna spend hours and hours and hours doing? And so what I ended up noticing was that it's just like Facebook and Twitter is just completely filled timelines of people taking screenshots. Oh my God, I caught the super rare fish, or I got the random bug. Look at my outfit. I made it myself. Or I'm a big fan of Halo, and I made the Halo guy suit and the helm, and you can wear it with this QR code. It's like, it's a social game. It's what it really is. And like, if you're playing Animal Crossing by yourself, I think you're going to be disappointed. Like, honestly, it's got a really fun collective mentality, or collector's mentality, I should say. So like, if you play the game, you want to collect all the things. If that's your type of game, then this is potentially a game you might find a lot of fun playing by yourself. And I like playing it by myself for a long time, but the goal of playing by myself is to complete the things that I want to do that need to be done for the next time I go hang out with my friends, if that makes sense.
How do you...
And so, the other big draw is the mobile market. I think that's a big one, because you can play this anywhere, and then you can have community streams where this is a very streamable game like Pokemon, where you can sit down, do whatever it is you want to do, and there is zero stress with doing what you're focusing on and looking at chat and interacting with them and answering their questions. That's a very social game.
How's the... I've heard conflicting things about the multiplayer aspect, and you're saying it's super important. How well and how does it work, I guess?
Okay, so I think the easiest way to break it down is with some of the availabilities. So if you've never played Animal Crossing before, I'm here for you, because this is my first one. So when I played this... It's called New Horizons, if you're curious. The other one was New Leaf, I believe, for the DS was the previous title. And that came out in 2015, I believe, 2016. I can't remember with all the dates mixed up with international, like if they did a worldwide or something like that. But in the game, you have to choose your country if you want. You can choose your language separate to that. And you can also choose your hemisphere, so that you get something of an exclusive pass to what's available and when. There are specific time slots in your local time that will restrict availability in the day-night cycle of what you can get in relationship to the critters, Critterpedia, and in the Fishpedia. You basically unlock in early stages of the first 2 or 3 days, you get access to building a museum on your island, and that's your completionist thing. You can catch all the things and record the data in your Wikipedia app on your phone in the game, or you can do that and then donate what you catch to the museum, and then you can go into this extraordinarily cool museum and go in, and they've got fossils, fish, and critters, which are basically just bugs. And when you go into these exhibits, they're just completely empty things of water, or just empty things of like trees and like lakes, or just little like glass boxes that have nothing in them until you start filling them up. And something that I noticed in the fish exhibit, in particular in the freshwater one, they've got stuff where it's like river's mouth, pond only fish. And then they also have like river fish only. And they have like a tiered exhibit of like 3 different waterfalls. And there's more fauna and flora that get added to it the more fish you catch, in addition to just adding the fish to the museum. So they have all these really cool aspects of the thing. There's a fish that unlocks like a scuba diving set and like a submarine exhibit, but you don't get either of those things until you catch a very specific rare fish. And that just gives you, again, this is all aesthetic, but the availability of them comes down to specific months out of the year in your region and specific times of day in some of them. And then some of them are just always available no matter what time of day or what hemisphere you're in. Furthering that, you've got the whole Minecraft appeal of making your home, unlocking items, going in every day and getting unique things that rotate every day on a random number generator type of a deal. You go into the shops, you build more things, you get more chances on the random rolls, if you will. You've got, there's a big grind in earning different currency. You've got bells, which is your money. You've got miles, which is kind of like a air miles program, and you can visit these random islands, and some of the random islands can help you make a bunch of money and increase the size of your house. You can basically, the whole island is your starting point, and then after that you can invite more residents. There's a whole social thing within the social game, right? You've got like the NPCs. It's like very layered, if that makes sense.
No, it all of this is both incomprehensible to me. Like, I don't quite get it. Like, what's the appeal of all of this? And I understand what you're saying. But it's just, I think I wonder if I wouldn't need to go and try it myself to see if it's for me or not. Because as you were saying as well, you didn't think this was going to be for you, but in the end you ended up, you know, losing sleep for a week trying to, you know, playing it. So
yeah.
So it's just the completionist thing that
I just love the completionist thing, man. Mm. The lighting in the game also is just, for something so cartoony to me, is like just amazing. They do some really interesting things in the game that make it incredible. They have really weird, funny, interactable things that you can do. Like with my house, I caught a relatively medium rare fish, which is a snapping turtle, but it wasn't available in my region. And I've got friends in Australia in the Southern Hemisphere, so I caught a couple with him. So if you put one in the museum and you don't sell it, you can also put it in your house or put it outside of the house in like a tank. And the snapping turtle apparently is the only thing that doesn't have a tank. It just sits there alive in your house wherever you put it down. And you can like, you use the interact button and the thing just goes like, and like screams at you and tries to bite at your hand when you interact with it.
And so,
and then there's other things where you can like turn a washing machine on, or I don't know. There's just ridiculous customization in the game, and it's got so much customization and random objects, and the social trading and giving your friends things and sending stuff to your friends in the mail, or even just the residents on your island that are NPCs, is really enjoyable. And I didn't think it would be, but I don't know if that's just the Japanese culture in me, because I loved watching, like going in the museum and being like, oh, that's the exact same thing that they have for the fire drills in Japan. And that's right there.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, so, well, that's a Japanese rice cooker.
What about play? You mentioned you played with someone, with one of your friends. Is it the case that you have to be online at the same time as they are to visit their island and stuff like that? Is there asynchronous multiplayer, or is it always you have to be online together?
Yes, I'm not really aware of the restrictions of how many people are allowed on Space yet, because I only have two friends that play that I know of and hang out with on the regular. But how we set it up is we hop in a Discord channel and we just hang out, and we'll play on our separate islands and say, okay, I need to get these things today or this month. And these things are going to go away at 7 p.m. my time, but you're an hour before me and they won't rotate until it rotates in your time. So I have an extra hour that I can go mess with.
Okay. All right.
But anyways, that's one of the main things, is you can go to their island, you can troll them, you can do funny things with them. There's certain limitations with how many things you can do with somebody's island. So like, if you chop down somebody's tree, they can't really do anything about that sort of griefing besides kick you out of the island. If you want to give them certain things, there's only certain things you can give them. So like bugs and fish and stuff like that, you have to catch on your own. And you control them by like scaring the fish by running away or running through them so they can't catch them and stuff. So there's some fun ways that you can do. Simple like griefing in Minecraft, where you like blow up everyone's fort with like TNT, stuff like that you could do. But it's less destructive, I think, in this game. And again, if somebody's doing something that's griefing you, just kick them out. So you can restrict who comes in and who goes away. You can do individuals, best friends, people who are on your friends list, or just to anyone that wants to search for somebody online.
Well, I still don't know if I would like this game. I'm still on no, but I wonder if my journalistic duty wouldn't be to give it a try and see what happens. But we'll see. All right. I do thank you very much for that lively tale. I do want to mention Bleeding Edge. As I said in the beginning of the show, I tried it out. And for those who don't remember, Bleeding Edge is essentially what if Hot Topic and emo culture was a MOBA and Overwatch hybrid. And I also didn't think it was going to be for me. It's essentially all like super edgy, skulls everywhere, like completely emo, cyberpunk, but in a cartoony way, kind of 4-on-4 brawl shooter / MOBA, objective based 3D third person game. That's a lot of...
This looks like Junkertown got together with Borderlands and made a MOBA.
Exactly. It's very Borderlands in the art style without the cel shading. But yeah, it's exactly that. And so I am 1000% not into that aesthetic. But it turns out
it turns out
the game is actually pretty fun, and the aesthetics aren't as annoying as I thought they would be. It even made me smile a couple of times. I think it gets tiresome after a while, but it was fine, and the gameplay is pretty fun. The reason I'm not going to play it more is because I already have many things I'm playing, and I don't need another competitive shooter-y type thing in my life to be destroyed by people who play more than I do in. But it's surprisingly fun, and it is on Game Pass, so it's available to people who have Game Pass on PC and Xbox, and so you always have people to play with, because there's a lot of people who play it. Surprisingly fun, surprisingly cool. A little bit complex, I would say, for people like me who enjoy the Overwatch arcadiness of the, you know, the initial learning of the game. There's more things to remember, but it really works, and I was very surprised. So
is this over the shoulder? Is this first person?
Third person.
Okay. It says it's a 4v4 fighter game. Is that
you do have some shooter aspects. There's a lot of melee, but even the shooters, you can set a target, so you don't have to aim a lot. So it is really more about the strategy of what you do when and how you execute under pressure in a slightly more MOBA way than a shooter, like aiming FPS.
Is it a bit
way.
Like Smite in that respect?
I didn't play Smite
almost
enough.
All skill shots, though.
Yeah, I didn't play Smite enough to remember exactly what it was about, but you don't have a lot of skill shots, I don't think. But again, you know, I played maybe an hour, so I'm not an expert. There's definitely skill, but not aiming skill as much. Like, I mean, in a MOBA, obviously you have to aim for your abilities and you have to do the right skill shots and stuff like that. So in that sense, yes, but not in the sense of Overwatch where you have to, everything about the gameplay is
like
aiming
the precision
and shooting.
Point.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah, so maybe not everyone's type of game, but certainly if it's free, then you should definitely give it a shot.
Yeah, kind of a if you have access to it via Game Pass, absolutely, it might be something you enjoy. And if you're looking for something in that category, you might.
There's also a Guitar Solo character in here.
Hey, what? Sorry?
There's a Guitar Solo character in here, if you like.
Yes.
If you like that sort of thing.
Yes, extremely, as I said, like he's an undead, extremely edgy, hot topic. the one thing is you only have 10 different characters, so that's a little bit light, but you know, it's not a deal breaker, but it's a little bit light.
Right. Looks like four in most of the categories that you can play. So four tanks.
I think it's
three supports.
Yeah, exactly. Four tanks, three supports. No, I think it's three tanks, three supports, and four DPS, but maybe I'm wrong, but it is for a tank DPS healer, heal tank DPS type game. And then Resident Evil 3 came out. I didn't play it, but just to quickly mention it, it seems everyone agrees it's good, but it's very common. It has a lot in common with Resident Evil 2, the remake, of course, and it's relatively short. It's about 5 hours, and it's a full-priced game. The multiplayer is in there in case, you know, it's an added value item, but we didn't get a lot of reviews on that. Most people are talking about the single-player aspect, and everyone agrees novelty has worn off a little bit, and it's much shorter as the original Resident Evil 3 was. It was supposed to be like a spin-off or even an add-on to the second one, but so that's the games we've been playing and Resident Evil 3, and now let's move on to the news, shall we?
Let's do it.
Nintendo is apparently remaking most 3D Mario games for the Switch, and I cannot wait. So this is rumors.
I'm excited.
So exciting. Rumors, so but excited. It's been rumored by several different sources that are quite reliable, so I'm putting stock into it. Sorry. Waking up when you have a kid is hard. So apparently what's going to happen,
it's
the 35th anniversary of the Super Mario Brothers series, and for that, Nintendo was planning to announce at E3 a number of remakes and ports on the Switch. They would include most of the 3D Mario games and a couple of other bonuses, but I was fully expecting Super Mario 3D World to show up at some point. It was an awesome Mario game that sadly nobody played because it was on the Wii U and nobody had the Wii U.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a deluxe version with added levels and nice. Stuff, so that's pretty cool. And you're also going to get a number of iconic Mario games. My understanding is that includes Super Mario World is already in there because it's on the the
like Mario Maker.
Yeah. No, I mean through the Super Nintendo, you know, online.
The Retro Pass thing.
Exactly.
With the online eShop Pass thing, yeah.
But then we're going to get 64, Sunshine, Galaxy 1, Galaxy 2, and this might be a full pack that you can buy, probably full price. And then 3D World Deluxe will also be a full price game, I imagine, and I will buy it again because I'm a sucker. But I would buy all of this. This is really cool.
Now listen, there's one thing that Nintendo needs to understand is that if they remake Mario Sunshine, I will buy it for $60 because I have been wanting to play Mario Sunshine on a good console for so long. I have not played this game in any context outside of its original release, outside of emulators, because this game has been so buggy with even the emulators that you can play it on. It's infuriating. And all I've wanted to do is replay Mario Sunshine for like the last 10 years. I just cannot wait to play Mario Sunshine again. I have idea.
I didn't have a GameCube and I never played Sunshine. This is...
You will not regret it when it re-releases through these rumors because I want to play it so bad.
I want to play... Actually, I didn't play Galaxy either so much. I bought it on Wii U.
Oh, Galaxy was spectacular.
I want to play all of this. And
I haven't played the second Galaxy, to be fair, but I did play the newest Switch one. What was that? Odyssey. Played that one. That was pretty good. There's a lot of extra stuff that I missed playing it, but I don't know. I'm all for the Nintendo 64 remake. I mean, that was great on DS when the remake first hit, and it was great on the 64 in the initial thing. And it still gets speedrun on Games Done Quick. So why not add another one to the pool?
I am very excited about all of this. And still rumors, but yeah, it's it seems like it's coming. And of course, they why would they do they not like money? Does Nintendo not want
money? Do you not want money?
So yeah, that's to me a huge piece of news. I'm very excited.
Yes.
And then there's a number of Wii U of Switch releases, BioShock, Borderlands, Outer Worlds, a number of games coming over the next couple of months. There's a new rhythm game mode coming to that's already there actually in Ring Fit Adventure. That's pretty cool, with Nintendo games music. So essentially, the Switch is still going strong, just as we're fighting over which of the next gen consoles has more teraflops. But yeah,
I don't know about you, Patrick, but BioShock, when I'm on a bus, sounds amazing. That sounds so awesome. The fact that I can play BioShock or Borderlands while going somewhere else is something that you should never like just check off the list. It's like, yeah, okay, it's coming to Switch. It's like anytime something hits the Switch, that means that's in your back pocket, in the back seat of a car, in the back of a bus, on a plane. This is commute versions for these games, if you get my drift. But I love BioShock. It's one of my favorite all-time games. And I think this is not just the original BioShock, right? This is the series, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And Borderlands is also multiple games. So it's kind of crazy that every, you know, the universal library, the Switch is becoming a universal library just as much as the PC.
Yeah.
So that's, but I don't think I want to replay BioShock though.
It's got enough replayability that I wouldn't mind. And I think that they've got those DLCs that some, and if not a lot of players haven't actually gotten unless they're super, super hardcore. And so for me, I would probably end up buying whichever one has the Infinite. If you don't have to buy it in a package, I'd like to get Infinite and the DLCs for Infinite because I haven't played those DLCs yet and just played on the Switch. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. The one thing that I always have in you know, in the back of my head when these things happen is you will play them while commuting and stuff, but they're designed for longer play sessions. Like you can't stop every 5 minutes.
Some of them, yeah.
So that's one thing to keep in mind. But it's definitely cool that they're coming. It's like it's a rite of passage now. Everyone has to bring their games on Switch. And I have to say, even though those games are really old, I am still impressed by the things that the Switch is able to achieve graphically. I never would have thought it could do as much as it can with that CPU.
Absolutely. I mean, if Breath of the Wild wasn't an indicator when it came out, then I don't know what is. Yeah. That it can run those type of things.
But even, you know, Breath of the Wild, I think graphically is not, like, you can see far, but the graphics are relatively simple. Like, you have very simple textures, simple colors, and
I think they're reducing like loading times more than anything to me. Is they're trying to make it run as smoothly as possible between zones.
That's true. There's a bunch of Nier news. Nier, the original one, getting like remade, new versions of iOS and Android. It's Nier Automata is coming on the Xbox Game Pass. My only experience, like Nier Gestalt, is getting remade. My only experience with Nier is Automata from a couple of years ago, and I hated that game so much. Again, I'm like the opposite of everyone else on Earth, and I understand that most people love it, but oh my god, it wasn't my thing. So if you like Nier, there's more Nier coming, and lots of it. So there you go. Another.
If it's any addendum to help you out, Patrick, I've literally never heard of this game.
Really? Oh, yeah. That is interesting. It's like it made a lot of noise. It's kind of a niche thing, but being from Japan, it's a very auteur type of thing, which is pretty well known with Automata. But I mean, I from what I know about you, I don't think you would like it. So maybe you can be my brother in disliking me here.
All right. Well, then I'll just continue not knowing anything about it. Just stay on my little island over here.
Epic is becoming a publisher, and they're doing things the way Tim Sweeney likes to do them, which is essentially a middle finger to the rest of the industry by making it as different from what the you know, bean pushers and money counters like to do. Basically, they're going to publish games from developers with letting them retain 100% of the IP rights. Usually when you have a publisher that gives a developer money to make a game, they want some rights on what the IP is, you know, what people are going to do with the IP down the line. Valve is saying, nope, none of that. Once the costs are recouped, the developer is going to be able to keep 50% or more of the money that comes in. Usually it's a lot less because obviously the publisher in those deals is putting in almost all of the money to begin with. And that, you know, means they demand more. And it's not even necessarily a play to get games on the Epic Game Store because the games aren't necessarily going to be exclusive to the Epic Game Store. Now, that being said, I'm sure that Valve will have stuff to say about that with Steam. But Epic is going to be like, hey, if you're on the Epic Game Store, the share is different. Like, you get more money for the game than for the store, which is a separate entity from Epic Games, I'm sure. So you recoup the costs faster and your split is going to be bigger, etc., etc. But it's not necessarily going to be Epic Game Store exclusives. And the companies that are involved in this are really exciting. It's Playdead, Remedy, and which one is the last one? I can't remember.
Control?
Remedy is the one that made Control. Playdead is the one that made Inside and Limbo.
And then Gen Design made
Gen
the last
Design,
Guardian.
Oh, that's the Last Guardian remake. But the main one is Remedy, of course, because Remedy has been a studio that's always been they do AAA games, but they've always been a little bit of a weird place because their games aren't all, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. But they're usually really interesting and often critically acclaimed. And Control was a big success, of course. So this is exciting for them. And it's interesting for Epic to be doing this. And for the industry.
So. You know the fully funded projects thing that they're doing with their publishing that gives, it says 100% of development costs for developer salaries to go to market expenses such as quality assurance, localization, marketing, and other publishing, and all publishing costs is a big, big bonus for these kind of development companies. Like QA and localization alone are just massive categories that could extend to other cultures, other languages. Like, if I'm looking at this as kind of a carrot on the stick for my development company, I think that is going to be one big thing I'm looking to do to kind of internationalize my game a bit. That makes sense.
Definitely. It means, I mean, this kind, of course, Epic is not going to give that kind of opportunity to any studio.
Sure.
But if you can get access to it, it seems like a no-brainer. Like, why would you not do this? Of course, you have to present a game, I'm sure, that they can get on board with, etc., etc. But there's no reason, like, it doesn't seem like there's any trick. You don't even absolutely have to go with an Epic Game Store exclusive. So it is the best. Yeah. It seems my knowledge of these kinds of deals is a little bit limited. So I can't say with 1,000% certainty that this is way, you know, the best version of the publishing deal you can get. But I'm pretty confident with the little knowledge that I have, and I have some. This is not how things work usually. So
yeah,
this
is really what more positive. Can they give you if you wanted an exclusive deal when you look at this, right? It's like, going to be the extra little cherry on top to kind of push you over? Because at this point, it's like, well, I could do this and list it on Valve's product. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you can, apparently. So, yeah. So, that's pretty interesting. I wonder if it will. It's interesting to see how militant Tim Sweeney is about these kinds of things. And of course, it's good for him, but it's also good for developers. So, other tidbits of news. Modern Warfare 2 has a remaster out, only for the campaign, but it's available. There's a Burning Crusade Classic that is getting questions in surveys from Blizzard, so it might happen. Like, the questions were about how would you like your character to be created, because that brings a whole lot of questions. Valve is remaking Artifact, essentially. There's a new beta coming, and that game fell flat on its face when it came out. Just as a reminder, you had to buy the game and then buy packs to build your... It's a card game. And to build your decks, you had to buy the game and card packs. So now they're getting rid of that. The double whammy was not very popular. And there were some gameplay
issues. I still smell some disappointment in their midst. So we'll see how that pans out.
Cloud Imperium Games is, that's the, oh my God, what's the name of their game? I'm freezing. The space thing, Star Citizen, there you go. They got more money, $17 million from investors. That never stops. Whoa. Tencent is developing a cloud streaming service in partnership with Huawei. So cloud streaming is definitely the flavor of the day. And Valorant, the Riot game, is coming out in beta on April 7th in just a few days. You've been following this one, obviously, I think, since you like these kinds of these types of games. It's your jam. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you guys are looking for something interesting, this is definitely something you're going to want to try to get your hands on a beta key. But if there's any indication with how difficult beta keys can be to get a hold of, I think that Riot is making it even harder so far, because it sounds like unless the NDAs are extremely strict with the people that they've invited out, then I don't know what to tell you, because it doesn't sound like the people are very confident and even like well-known streamers are going to be getting access to these beta keys. So I don't know how that's going to pan out. I know there's a lot of top Apex players that are ready to jump ship. I know that there's listed just a big chunk of Overwatch people are like, I'm sick with Overwatch, I'm going to go play this game. People are literally like, I think there was news that they were signing the first ever Valorant pro to a team before Valorant even came out, which I thought was really, really cringy in the least sense.
Well, it seems to be like, so close to CSGO that it feels like we almost know what crowd it's going to attract. It's
what you know what to expect of who you want to sign for an esports team. Sure, yeah. This game does seem to be really interesting, but for me, it's more interesting how many Overwatch people that are going from Overwatch to this rather than like CS people or other adjacent games to Counter-Strike, because or even like Rainbow Six Siege people would make more sense, and in Call of Duty, like online players would make more sense than Overwatch. Overwatch is so unique compared to Valorant that Valorant was very, very particular with their Riot messaging that it's not got like an ultimate ability and everything has to be bought like a weapon. So I feel like everyone would be totally fine with buying abilities in your buy screens between games than anything.
Yeah, just to be clear, this is within the context of the game, just like CSGO. It's not that you have to buy them with real money. It's the game economy. As rounds progress, you can get better and better weapons within the game.
Right. Yeah, that's a good distinction to make. I'm actually more interested with this game, with their longevity, with it, how Riot plans to integrate their money-making scheme with this. And I don't know, unless you know, Patrick, about if this is a free-to-play game like League of Legends, or is this a buy and then also enhance with like cosmetics? Because I knew that they said stuff about cosmetics, and that's something that Riot Games and CSGO do really, really well, to the point of having scandals in case of CS like websites popping up. But I don't think they're going to be hurting for money if this is similar enough to CSGO and the abilities make it like distinguishing enough that it's different. So I'm more curious as what the other companies are going to be doing and how they're going to be making money with Valorant and what they're offering besides like hero skins. You know, and if they're going to do gun skins as well, or how many heroes are going to end up being able to create long term with the game economy. It seems like that would be really difficult for them to make, but you know, Overwatch and Nova's are any indicator. I don't think it's going to be that hard.
It's, and they have experience with League of Legends as well. Right. I think they're fine in that sense. And the crowd is the CS. I think there are a number of people who enjoy, like the people who enjoyed these kinds of FPSs before Overwatch came out. I think they're going to find joy in this one. I suspect many people who got into FPSs with Overwatch and the ease of use of Overwatch might give it a try and might be disappointed, but they might also you know, discover something they like. But I think most people, the attraction of like the strong suit of Overwatch is a little bit, to a certain extent, a little bit more the fun of it and the fantasy of it than the strategic aspects of it. It's there too, of course, but I think for a lot of people, the general public, it's a lot of fun and accessibility to the game. And it doesn't seem to me like Valorant is going that route. But
no, they're we'll definitely see. Hitting the hardcore crowd with the Counter-Strike crew, if you will. But I don't know very many people that play Counter-Strike for a long period of time. And I think that it's also really fun if you can go to like a LAN center with some friends and just mess around and this sort of thing. You can play a competitive game casually with friends. It just kind of depends on your social group and what people are willing to play.
That's true. But and
art style is spectacular for this game, by the way. Yeah. Like, very cool.
I'll definitely give it a try if I can. And I mean, just to be clear, Riot has proven that catering to the hardcore crowd, it can be very, very successful with League of Legends. That's all they do. So I'm sure they have a huge opportunity with Valorant as well. So we'll see.
Absolutely.
Last tidbits, Bethesda is not going to be doing anything for June. They had an E3 showcase planned, but they've canceled everything, including anything streaming, which leads me to believe, what were they going to do during the showcase that they don't need to do now. Like, maybe they're going to show stuff on other people's streams, like maybe they're doing something with Microsoft, but I suspect, because they have to be showing games, I don't think we have anything planned for this year or next from Bethesda, anything big and new. So maybe they're going to be hopping on Microsoft's stream. It's possible.
Yeah,
GameStop, the CEO of GameStop, has told investors that he doesn't expect production of the next-gen consoles to be delayed. And actually, Phil Spencer from Xbox also said that in a podcast, in Podcast Unlocked. He had an hour-long conversation with the folks at IGN, and that's one of the many things he said. So that's, I mean, obviously it's not the most important
thing
in the world.
Very interesting.
But I'm happy that the next-gen consoles hopefully will be there on time, and hopefully the games will be there too.
Yeah, we'll see.
And if you're looking for games, PlayStation Plus has Uncharted 4 this April, something to travel a little bit in your living room. And Humble Bundle has the Humble Conquer COVID-19 bundle, which is full of like so many games, huge, great value. So check that out if you're interested. It's like $30 and you get like $1,000 worth. No, I'm kidding, but it's a ton of
Undertale's
games
in there. That's all you need.
Yeah. Well, I already own like so many of those games, but also it's for charity and you contribute to effort. So I might get it, but it's like literally, as Bundle often does it, you get games and you also help developers or some charity or something, and it's just very cool,
right?
So
Humble Bundle's also got some other stuff going for like tabletop games right now, if you guys are curious, and that sort of
I don't really play tabletop games, but if you do, just check it out.
Yeah,
and that's it. Thank you so much, Rob, for being on the show with me.
That was a blast.
Would you tell people where they can get more of you online, not in real life?
Sure. If you want to contact me anywhere, it's similar to Patrick. I actually end up ripping off his name when I was back in 2009 listening to The Instance. So if you want to find me, I'm at Not Rob on Twitter. My Twitch is Not Rob May. I don't really stream very much, so I don't know how that's going to really help you. But you can find pretty much anything there. If you like Overwatch, I'd recommend a podcast to you called Omnic Lab. It's kind of a good show, I'd say. I work pretty hard on it, so it might be up your alley if you're interested in getting better in the game or learning a little bit more of the ins and outs of specific heroes or maps. That's kind of your one-stop shop if you're on the go. You listen to podcasts at home during this time. I know that a lot of people are switching over to video formats, watching streams in particular rather than podcasting. But that's just how I know I consume podcasts. I listened a little bit less during this sort of thing, unless I'm commuting.
You're not alone, but, I think, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks again, Patrick, for kind of inviting me to Pixels this week. It was actually a lot of fun. I've not done this in a long time since we were at BlizzCon just talking only Blizzard stuff. So this was a lot of fun to kind of shotgun approach the whole gaming industry for a little bit with you. Thank you again.
Thank you for being on. It was a blast, and your Twitter account will be linked in the show notes, of course, as always. Mine will be in there as well. It's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can check out my corner of the forest in Finland if you follow me on Instagram. And Not Patrick over there. And that's it. We'll be back in about a couple of weeks with another show. Until then, stay home if you can. Wash your hands. Don't cough on people, and be good. Talk to you then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.